Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Northeast. You're here just in time for post-Super Bowl Philadelphia cleanup.
Yes, I am. What an amazing experience it was to be here in Philadelphia. I'm here to speak back-to-back Sundays at a church in the Philadelphia area, and to see the madness and the passion of these Eagles fans here, it was unbelievable yesterday at the service. And then to see just everybody go nuts when the Eagles actually won, it was quite an experience for a California guy where nobody's really passionate about much of anything.
So what were you, guest speaking because, you know, the pastor was at the Super Bowl or something?
No, he wasn't at the Super Bowl. It's just a church that I'm tightly connected with, and he's taken some time off. So he asked me to come up and fill in for him. So I've been up here and I'm doing back-to-back Sundays and meeting with the elders and just, you know, trying to be a source of encouragement to a church that really is, they kind of get it. They get it locally and they get it globally. So it's a blessing and a privilege to be here. And then you get the whole Eagles thing on top of it.
Well, you know, I heard, you know, just kind of as a sidebar, that city workers in Philly were going around greasing up all the poles so no one could climb them and stuff. Did you hear about that?
I did. And then on the local news last night, they were showing people that were climbing those poles even with the grease on them. And the commentators were talking about that's sort of a badge of honor if you can climb a grease pole and steal the street signs.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, this is part three of talking about the maintenance debrief.
Yes, it is.
And so we talked about we gave an overview a couple of podcasts ago when we were talking about the on-field care visit, mm-hmm. and the concept was introduced in that podcast, and then in our most previous podcast. You gave a good definition and overview of it. And I guess today, what are you going to do? Get into the nuts and bolts, what the components of the maintenance debrief are?
Yes, I think that's probably the best way to do it is, you know, the goal of a maintenance debrief, which is basically a debrief for somebody that's still going to continue to serve on the field. And, you know, it can be done there in their context when you're doing an on-field care visit, or you know, it can be done somewhere else, even back here while they're on furlough. But the two main goals are to confirm them in their calling and then to, you know, help them calibrate sort of their life for more effective ministry and just more, you know, better spiritual and emotional health. So I thought, you know, maybe today we could just talk about how do you do that? What are the questions that help bring those two things about?
So do you like work through a checklist?
Yeah, I actually have a checklist that I work through. Of course, I've done it enough where I can sort of do it on the fly. But yeah, I have basically I have about 10 questions that I like to ask to help with the confirmation of their calling component of it, and then a good solid, you know, 5 to 6 questions that I use to help them think through how to calibrate their lives.
Okay, well, why don't you start walking through what those steps are, where you start?
Okay.
Unpack that for us, and I'm sure I'll have a couple of questions.
Okay. Well, one of the principles, especially on this confirmation phase, one of the principles that I've learned and then I've actually seen is incredibly helpful is when you're talking with a missionary, a lot of times they're measuring their lives by the circumstances or the situations that's taking place in their lives. And so one of the things that's helpful, one of the foundational things that we could do is we want to ask questions that sort of, you know, lift their eyes up to the Lord. So to sort of start moving in that direction, you know, what I like to do, no matter how long they've been on the field, is I like to ask them, you know, to summarize their first few months, the final few months of their experience prior to going to the field. You know, what was it like, hey, your last few months before you went to the field? And then, you know, what you do is when they sort of talk about it, and even sometimes you have to kind of prime the pump a little bit. But once they're moving in that direction, then, you know, get them to say, get them to think about, well, what were some of the specific blessings that God poured out on you as you were preparing to go to the field? What that does is that prods them to bring God into that experience, to see his hand. And when you think about all the things that God has to make happen, to get a missionary to the field prior to their departure, to get them to think about seeing that whole experience from a God-centered perspective rather than their own perspective is a really a great step in the right direction.
Yeah, I will say that when we were getting ready to go to Africa, that period of our family's life is tattooed in my brain. Mm-hmm. I remember just watching God move in the sale of our house, the money we made on our house, the paying off debts that we thought that we were going to have to drag with us. And, you know, we're thankful that we didn't have to. All and everything kind of had to fall in line, and we had no control over how things would fall in line.
Right. Yeah. And what happens is, I mean, every missionary on their way to the field has those kind of things happening. And because, you know, they're moving down a path that they're convinced God called them to, and that's been confirmed by a lot of people that know them and love them. What happens is when they're in the midst of it, they see little things as God's hand of affirmation on them, that they're exactly where he wants them to be, doing what he wants them to be doing. And then what happens is you get out there on the field and you start living life day to day, which isn't glamorous. It's not romantic. And then what can happen is you sort of forget about what it took to get you out there. And when you do think about it, you sort of disconnect it from God being the orchestrator of it and just sort of see it as stuff that happened. And so it's really helpful when you can get people to see, hey, the very fact that you're living on the mission field, that you are a missionary and you're going to continue to be a missionary, hey, that was God orchestrated. And so what that does is that helps confirm them in their calling. He got you here. And he's maintained you here. So you know what? He must want you to be here.
Jeff, when you're in those debriefs with people, do you ever see them pull out their journals or anything like that?
Yeah, sometimes they do. They do pull out their journals. And that's why I, even in my pre-field training, my pre-field interviewing and so forth, I tell people, you know, keep a journal. Write down. Because A, not only because you're going to have to write newsletters and updates to people, but just, you know, articulating in written form what you've seen God do and seeing an action, an event, something that happened at the time you're in it, seeing God's hand in it. Because as time passes, we tend to see what happened, but we forget the God connection in it.
That's the first step.
Yeah.
Where do you transition from there?
Well, what I do is I talk about, okay, the things leading up to getting them to field. And then I say, you know, we'll talk about your first few months on the field. What was it like here? And where did you see his hand now that you're in this totally foreign context and you'd seen his hand prior to getting there? Where did you see his hand when you were on the field and you were working through the culture shock and you were trying to adjust to a new life out there? That's sort of the pre and post of the actual departure. You get them to talk about the experience, and then you get them to see God in the midst of it. And what I do from there is I like to then move them towards helping them to think about a reality check. And so what I'd like to do, and this is kind of the specific question that I ask, how does that first few months of your actual experience on the field, how did it compare to what you expected it to be like prior to going?
I expect by now, as you get into this question,
yes,
by now they're really talking.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because probably were slow in question one, really working hard to really remember where God was working. And then toward the end of talking about, you know, God getting them, you know, ready to go to the field, they're really starting to tell their story. And then when you ask them about what were the first months like, they're probably like, oh man, let me tell you. And then they're just letting you have it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, what one of the things, and we're all wired this way, is to talk with somebody that asks you thought-provoking questions, and then they actually listen to you when you give your answers. They're genuinely interested. Their ears and their eyes and the tilt of their head and their facial expressions, you know, they show, hey, this person's really interested in hearing these things. And so, again, those listening skills, those personal interactive listening skills, and then recognizing that, you know, a lot of times missionaries, and I think this is really interesting, missionaries have learn to be good listeners. Successful missionaries, their entry posture was to be a learner and a listener. And so what happens is when somebody starts asking them questions where they get to talk, they sort of are looking for an opportunity to listen themselves. And so and probably in most of their other experiences with people that have come to visit them or people that know and love them, they'll get questions about the experience. And as they start to answer, the person they're telling their answer to will look for a window to start telling about their own personal experience. And then they end up sort of getting shut down on being able to expound on, you know, what they've been going through. But somebody's been trained, and in a debriefing, you know, you want them to unpack what they've experienced. So when they really sense, A, this person asks me really good questions, B, this person really is provoking me to think along lines I don't normally think at, and C, they really seem to be interested in what I'm saying, and they don't interrupt me and start telling me about their lives based on something I just said, but they want me to elaborate even further. When those things are happening, man, those missionaries will unload. And it's a beautiful thing to watch when a missionary senses safety, a genuine interest, and so forth. It's a beautiful thing to watch, and that ministers to them.
What kind of range of emotions do you see?
You see all. First of all, you know, I think that, you know, what I've seen is you, at first you see caution. You know, they don't know how honest they can be with you. You'll see frustration at first as they describe things, and you can sort of pick up on their frustration, like in that question about how is your actual experience compared to your expectations before you got here. As they sort of describe that, you know, you will sense frustration, or even like some of them can even, you know, they sort of express despondency that it wasn't at all what they expected, and they're bummed out about that. Some are frustrated because it's they thought they knew better, and now they know that they didn't, and those kind of things. So you can see the whole gamut of emotions, and then what happens is I kind of equate it to talking to a child. Kids don't have any filters when they're first learning to talk, right? And you get a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, you know, you only learn to filter what you say as you get older. It's part of the maturing process. In the same way, as missionaries feel comfortable with the person debriefing them and feel comfortable at talking about these things, they sort of put down their filters too. And you can start to see raw emotions coming out of them, and they're not used to communicating that way. And that is that's a major breakthrough, that they can feel that comfortable with you and that trusting to open up at that level. So you see the whole spectrum to answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, missionaries, they don't get a chance. Like you said, Jeff, is that they're always in listening mode. So that means that they're always on.
Right.
I mean, you have to be on
right.
to not be jumping into the conversation. And, you know, a guy with a role like yours shows up, you know, after a while, it's like, wow, I really can be off. I can really
yes.
unpack this. I can really unload this. This guy might even be able to give me some answers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a safe. It's, you know, that's the terminology. They've got to know that you're a safe person to talk to. And once they really get that you're safe to talk to, oh, it's a beautiful thing. And what happens is, and again, this is not the goal, but this is the byproduct, is the bond between the person doing the debrief and the missionary. When you're talking at that level, the tethers of connection are so much deeper, and you're locked in for life. You got somebody for life, and it's a beautiful thing.
And when you come across missionaries, they will share that kind of experience with, you know, other pastors or other guys that come on. They'll be like, that Pastor Jeff, he came. It was such a blessing.
Yes.
And I've heard that said about other guys that have really cared mm-hmm. for missionaries. And it's a gift. I mean, you know, some guys, you know, they go out and they kind of go through the motions a little bit. And a lot of them don't even know what the motions are. That's why
right.
they need a tool,
right.
like the tool you're providing right now.
Right.
So that they can actually engage at a deeper level and have a track to work through.
Right.
But just to say that, as I've spent times with missionaries on the field and people that have worked with you, and they just love it when you come out, and they love it when guys with real pastoral hearts mm-hmm. come and just listen.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that, again, I mean, there's a giftedness involved with it for sure, but if you just love people, and especially you understand the the gravity of what it takes for somebody to be a missionary. I think just somebody with some training, kind of like what we're trying to accomplish with these podcasts, just somebody with some training can be an incredible source of blessing, you know, to a missionary. And so, so once I get them sort of, and then now they're feeling comfortable, I kind of like to transition into, okay, let's talk about the real difficulties of that you've been experienced. So tell me, what's the most difficult thing you've experienced since you got on the field, and both ministry wise and personal wise. And then as they think that through and unfold it, you want to always ask the question, well, why? Why was that the most difficult thing? What was it about that was just like a major mountain that you had to climb, or a major valley that you fell into? So you want to get out of them, what has been the most difficult, and then why was it difficult?
Do you ever have people after you've had some of these conversations call you up later, man, and say, I should have told you this, or I should have told you that?
Yeah, a few times that's happened. But I think if you really, have the time block set apart that you need, and you're communicating at this level, most of what's really they're dealing with is going to come to the surface while you're together. Although that does happen at times. And again, you gotta kind of, again, there's a certain component, I guess, of giftedness in this where, sometimes you've got to dig a little deeper. They may say something has been a real different or a difficult challenge or whatever, and you just kind of got to probe a little deeper and say, really, was that really that heavy? There isn't anything else that rivals the challenge that of that specific thing. And then it kind of provokes them to think, well, yeah, no, now that you say that. So there is a sort of interplay on your feet interaction that you want to have with them. And that helps to be able to think on your feet.
I imagine too, the timing of your visit, is everything. I mean, they could either be going through a lull mm-hmm. in their ministry life, or they could be going through the worst thing they could possibly be going through. And it might just by happenstance coincide with your visit, or your visit could be because it's the worst thing that's happening.
It could be that too, but because a maintenance debrief can take place here in the States. So it could be, where they're, if they've been back for a little bit, say they're back on a 3-month break, in the States, and they're, halfway through it, and they're just like totally going through reentry shock of being back here for a little bit of time, that can affect it too. So again, you've got to kind of probe around a little bit and actually bring up the obvious sometimes, like, hey, I know you've been back like 6 weeks and you're thinking about, man, I got to get back out there in 6 weeks. And life is overwhelming here, having 25 kinds of toilet paper to choose from at Walmart. So I know that can filter your, sometimes that can filter your answers to what I'm asking you. So I want to, I want to probe around a little deeper on that. But yeah, that's a really good point.
Let me ask you this one without violating anybody's privacy. I mean, what kind of hairy topics have you had to get into while you're out there?
There's been one of the issues that's come up a few times is pornography problems, mm-hmm. where as they start to feel comfortable with you, either the wife or the husband will talk about a personal issue like, hey, my husband, or hey, I'm dealing with some issues with pornography. Missionaries are not immune to that. And the internet makes access to that kind of stuff available to almost anywhere around the world. Sometimes, really marriage issues have come up where, after a while of, and again, you always try to do this with the husband and wife together, this debrief, you want to do it with them together. You sort of pick up on the interplay between the husband and wife, and sometimes some marriage issues have come to the surface, especially when you get into the questions about, the calibration part of the debrief, where, because a lot of what's going on that comes to the surface when you're in that phase of the debrief is based on, they're not in balance. They haven't got the right boundaries up, and it's straining their marriage relationship or their parenting skills. So yeah, that kind of stuff comes up, and sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does. And sometimes it takes months. Maybe they do after you've talked with them and they felt safe. A couple of months down the road, I've occasionally heard from people saying, you know what? I really wanted to talk with you about this, but I didn't feel comfortable right then, and now I want to bring it up. So yeah, when I, you know, and then the other thing, and like I talked about at the beginning, is when you get them going on this, like here's one specific question that I think is, this question is always, always helpful. And that is, you know, when you've got them talking about what's been the most difficult thing that they've dealt with personally or ministry-wise, is to ask them, okay, which aspects of God's character became more real to you as a result of those difficulties? God's character is obviously multifaceted. And when you were going through this, when you hit the wall, which aspects of his character really came alive to you? What part of himself did he reveal to you in a special way? And that really moves him forward.
It sounds like, I mean, when you start talking about, you know, a guy in your role could be dealing with marital issues or finding out about pornography. I mean, that sounds like the kind of thing that may cause some guys to pump the brakes a little about going out and doing a debrief. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you really have to have some intentionality and a true servant's heart.
Yeah, absolutely. You do. You have to, it has to be intentional. And again, you've told them that ahead of time, right? We talked about that, I think, on the last podcast that, hey, they understand we're just not getting together to have coffee and just kind of get caught up with what's going on in your life. I'm here to debrief you. I really want to help you unpack your experience and process it. And so, you know, you need to be prepared for that. And when people know that's what they're getting into, yeah, I mean, there is a possibility that it could slip into some very specific challenges that they're facing. And one, and I think, you know, we've talked about this on a previous podcast, like with PTSD, and, you know, knowing what you don't know is important. So to be able to say to somebody who now has confessed about a pornography addiction or whatever, you know, it's not your realm of expertise, you're not a counselor. So to be able to say, you know what, thanks for sharing that, you know, that's a pretty serious subject. You know, I'm going to be praying for you on that. And I really want to challenge you to be in thinking about, you know, do you need to talk to somebody that really has some expertise in that area? So, you know, recognizing that you're not a professional counselor is crucial, so they can be honest, but recognizing when you're not going to be the guy to fix them. That's not your role to fix them. It's your role to point them to Jesus, get them to see God in a new way, get them to see themselves in a new way, and then help them to figure out how to let God work in their lives.
Sounds like that there needs to be a built-in mechanism for some follow-up too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes a follow-up will be as simple as, hey, you know, I want you to, when we go away, you know, there's three bullet points, three action points. I want you to do this, and I'm going to follow up with you on that. In fact, that's in training people to do debriefing, is one of the most important things is, look, don't tell the missionary you're going to do something and not actually do it. So if you tell them, hey, I want to ask you how you feel about that a month from now, then write it down and make sure you ask them how they feel about that a month from now. Don't say you're going to do something and not follow through. So that's kind of the whole we sort of got a little off the rails there, but the idea of, in the confirmation process, getting them to kind of look up and see, you know, they've had bumps, they've had pleasures. Where have they seen God in it? And then asking them a question, you know, as you look forward to the next season of life and ministry on the mission field, what are you excited about? And hey, how is he confirmed that you're right where he wants you to be, doing what he wants you to be doing? And you know, another great question is, what was the source of that confirmation? Was it your pastor? Was it somebody else on the field? Was it a national? You know, you'd be surprised how much encouragement can come from the nationals, where they say, you know what, we recognize you're here in our lives by God's design. And I know it's hard for you, but thank you for being here.
It's really interesting to see how nationals interact. We in America don't usually express ourselves that way. You know, when someone comes into the neighborhood, you know, that we're really glad you've moved into this neighborhood. We're really glad you're here. But that is something that you will see on the mission field, especially someone that's grown in the Lord. And I'll tell you what, I've met men and women on the mission field that are light years beyond where I was,
right,
in my walk with the Lord. And that's why it's so important to go with the attitude of being a learner. Rather than thinking that, you know, you're going to be teaching everybody all the time. That's the furthest thing from the truth.
It is. And recognizing, you know, the debriefer, you know, recognizing this obviously, and then helping the missionary to see that God is confirming their calling and their presence there through a multifaceted number of ways. So it could be coming from the nationals, it could be coming from people back home, it could be coming from, you know, team members if you're part of a missionary team, it could be coming from your personal reading of God's word, it could have been a message that you heard. You know, God works confirmation from a number of different sources. And I think to be open to that is important. So, yeah, that's kind of the component of, you know, where you're trying to get them to, the purpose of a maintenance debrief is to confirm them in their calling. And these are the kind of questions that will help bring that about.
Well, we want to make sure we have resources on the website. So I'll connect with you, Jeff, and maybe steal your notes that you're working from in this podcast and
sure.
Put up a blog post up on the website connected to this podcast, just so that people have a bit of an outline to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be an additional resource that is up there with all the other great resources that Shepherd Staff has on the website.
Yeah, that's great. And then as far as the calibration part, it's not as intensive, but just a couple things, questions, you know, to help them sort of self-analyze their life, to calibrate it is, you know, hey, and this sounds goofy, and I know how hard this is to do for me as a pastor when people ask me this. Hey, describe what you spend your time doing each of the 7 days of a typical week. And again, taking the time to let them do that. Okay, what does your normal Monday look like? And I know you don't do the same thing every day. It's not like you go to work at 8, come home at 5, you make widgets all day long. No, what's your typical Monday to Friday, 7 day or 7 days stretch of time? What does it look like? And then asking them question like, you know, okay, are there any things that you're doing to maintain the balance between your personal and family life and the ministry you're doing? You know, what are the intentional sort of boundaries or structures or habits that you've set up to sort of keep the balance between personal, family, and ministry? And missionaries are notorious for being workaholics, and they find their meaning and identity in being busy, and then amplified, that mindset is truly amplified by the fact that they're on support. And so they tend to think, because, you know, somebody's spending $20 of their hard-earned paycheck to support me a month, I can't ever take time off or not be in ministry mode, because they need to get their money's worth. And that can really cause people to go off kilter in the balance of their lives.
Well, that's excellent. Is there anything else you cover?
Well, I do, and just quickly to kind of finish this up in one podcast is, you know, I like to ask them, you know, what do you like to do just for yourself that you find restful? And you know, what is it that you do that's restful, that disengages your mind from the ministry-related things that normally occupy your thinking, you know? So, and some people rest, like me, I rest by reading. I mean, I read as part of my role, my job. I read a lot, but reading is restful to me. So when my brain's disengaged from ministry, it's engaged in reading. And then there's, you know, physical activity, whatever. But the idea of helping them think through what is it that they find restful and that triggers them a disengagement from ministry-related things that normally occupy their thinking. And then ask them, are you programming that into your week? And if you're not, why not? You know, and that'll give you some indication into that. And here's a question that is really provokes some really interesting answers is if someone you know and love was living their life the same way you are right now, with the same ministry, personal rest, time management, pace of life that you live by, would you recommend they make any changes?
We hate answering questions like that.
We do. But it's good. It provokes people to think along those lines, because, you know, much easier to see what's good for other people than it is for ourselves.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. So, and then here's another thing that I found helpful. And again, I was provoked to this by some people speaking into my own life, if you were going to take a whole 24-hour day off, describe what you would be doing each segment of the day. Like, what one thing would you do in the morning? What one thing would you do in the afternoon? What one thing would you do in the evening? And you want to get them to limit it to one thing. That's crucial, because once they say that, then it's now you can make it measurable. So that's kind of another thing. And then the last thing I do on this part of it, and again, these could be all fleshed out in more detail, but you know, who are a few people that you trust that can hold your feet to the fire and that will get in your grill, will take the initiative to hold your feet to the fire and say, hey, are you taking that whole day off every week? Are you keeping the balance in your life? And give that person the right to probe at that level, and even the right to talk to your spouse. Like, okay, if I asked your wife how you're doing on these things and you give me the right to ask your wife, who would be that kind of person?
Now who would these people be? Would these people be other missionaries that are on the field or people back home?
It could be other missionaries on the field, although it's kind of hard sometimes because you're in the midst of the battle. But a lot of times this is where leadership in their home church, especially people that have been they've been in a home fellowship with prior to going to the field, maybe their pastor, depending on the level. But people who know you well enough and care about you enough to probe in and to take the initiative, to not wait for you to call. Well, you know, they'll call me if they're having a problem, and if I don't hear from them, they must be doing fine. That's not the people you want. And so by doing that, this calibration thing, then you can help them even walk through a structure. Okay, let's restructure your life so that when you're actually taking your rest and doing the things that are restful for you, and you've got these boundaries going, you're going to be better at your ministry. And you're going to be healthier emotionally, spiritually, and relationally with your wife or your family or other people. Big subject, but, you know, basic principles that if they're followed, you know, you can be a real source of a blessing to a missionary.
That sounds excellent. I can think of a ton of folks that could benefit from this. Mm-hmm. And they all come from the churches of guys that listen to this kind of a podcast.
Well, praise the Lord. That's kind of, you know, that's what we're looking for, actually. And imagine the blessing if you had a bunch of guys, church leaders, both men and women and home fellowship leaders that really, you know, recognized and valued the cost that missionaries pay to get out there and want to be a blessing to them at this level. That can make a huge difference in the kingdom expansion. I have a special place in my heart for those that answer the call to do missions. And I think they're worthy of, I mean, every person is worthy, but because of the unique things that they experience, they deserve this kind of attentiveness. And I think God's glorified by that.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.